Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. Grab a cup of coffee, take a seat. If you can take notes, this is going to be a really good discussion today because I'm going to talk to you about the power dynamic that exists in settlement agreements and how to change them. When I work with couples and they engage in settlement talks, their ability to create a settlement agreement is based on the power dynamic that existed in their marriage. The power dynamic can be a very equal one in which the couple easily made decisions together, or the power dynamic can be very unequal, in which one person controls and dominates the other person, especially when money is concerned, and or if that person being controlled secretly spends money, secretly takes money, secretly creates expenses for the community, meaning the marriage, the couple, then it's going to be a very disruptive power dynamic getting out of the marriage, but then going into the settlement agreement, all of those hurt feelings, all the fear, all the anger, all the disruption leading up to the divorce, that's going to play out in the settlement agreement. So you have this dysfunctional power dynamic established in a divorce mediation, and it really affects the reality of the settlement, the logistics of the settlement, and the effectiveness of the settlement after the divorce is final. Because, you know, a lot of times people will make settlement agreements out of stress. Not a lot of times, every time. Stress is part of every settlement agreement. But a lot of times people will say, okay, especially the one with less money, just to get out of the agreement. And it doesn't work going forward. Or the person who has the money may be so distressed and makes these settlement agreements, maybe gives more away than they want. And once the divorce is final, everybody has a clear head. And with that clear head, they start having decision maker remorse. So it's really important that the power dynamic be addressed when the mediation takes place, when the settlement agreements take place, because that power dynamic is everything when people sit down to negotiate. So how does the power dynamic express itself in a divorce mediation? Well, I have a few stories to tell you, and that's the easiest way for me to show you what uneven power dynamics look like, and they're for different reasons. So let's just say we have a couple in which one person really had an inconsistent work history and they just didn't provide money all the time and generally made less than the other person. And the other person has a very consistent work history, really does deal with money differently, saves money, invests money, and now you have the divorce. And by the way, financial reasons are the number one reasons why people get divorced. Number one reason. It is not infidelity. And it is not personality disorders, which right up there. We don't realize how crazy we are or our spouses are when we get married. We certainly find out afterwards, don't we? But this is when one person really accrued all the assets and the other person didn't. So the person with all the assets is in fear and they'll be told by the other spouse who's dragging their feet, doesn't want to finish the divorce because they're in the catbird seat. They're either being paid money by the other spouse who has money or their only center of power is holding up the divorce. It's not money, it's time. That's where the person earning less money has their control in time. And that person says, I'll see an attorney if you don't let me have my way, whatever it is. So the threat I'll see an attorney from the person without assets, even though the person is the other person is dividing everything they have. The person with all the assets listening to the kind of underdog spouse that doesn't have the assets say, I'm going to see an attorney, that's a threat. And depending on the person's point of view or security, the person who has the assets, depending on their point of view and their own security, that in and of itself will stop them and they'll start acquiescing. And okay, I'll wait. Okay, I'll give you more money. And the person with no assets is the one controlling the process. There's the uneven power balance. So what do you do? Well, the person with all of the assets, all they have to do is see an attorney. So when one person says, well, I'm going to go get an attorney, great, get an attorney. Get an attorney who will tell you you're taking way too long. If she wanted to take you to court, maybe you could be sanctioned, depending on the state you're in. The person without the assets, all they have to say to the other person is, I'm going to get an attorney. The person with the assets freaks out. Okay, what do you want next? Okay, how long do you want to wait? Okay, just tell me when you're ready. No. It is an unnecessary power balance, especially if you are the spouse with the assets and you're willing to give exactly what you're supposed to give according to the law. What do you have to worry about? Nothing. You're obeying the law. You're ready to give it. And what if you are in a situation where you, with the assets, have already given some of them away? In the meantime, as good faith. Good faith. That is an interesting phrase, isn't it? Good faith. Because there's no good faith. You may be giving assets away in good faith, but the recipient is just enjoying the power because they don't have the power of money. That's what they don't have. And that's what settlement agreements are about. How do you divide money? So the person without the money is really, at least in this moment, holding the cards because the fear of the other person is letting them. So again, the person with assets, go see an attorney. Unless there's guilt that caused the divorce. So guilt is an interesting factor that creates a power imbalance. Guilt, if it's in the person who has the assets, guilt will position that person in a less powerful way, and that person will start acquiescing. Well, okay, that's fine. But what can you do to overcome that? Well, you can apologize if it's something to apologize for. But what if it's something like you can't have a child and you really both wanted to have a child? Women especially, I mean, the inability to have a child is on both people. I mean, both spouses, men and women, can have a physical inability to have a child. I guess whomever it is, if it's whoever it is, man or woman, they can't bear children, they can't generate children. Well, it's not your fault, but yet isn't that interesting? People feel guilty about something like that. What if you have been an overspender? People feel guilty about that. But the person who has the inability to earn a living with resultant fear over having to pay spousal support. That's the interesting part. Okay, so the person who had an inability to earn a living, maybe the deal was that they are too embarrassed to ask for spousal support and therefore are using other means for power. That could be. Maybe the person with all of the assets, and let's say they're plentiful, maybe that person is living in fear of paying support. So there's all this fear wrapped up into money. And the fear plays out into a stalled negotiation. And it's weird how the power dynamic changes, that the person with all the money and all the assets either feels guilty about their part in the relationship and lets the other person have the upper hand, or fears having to pay support. Well, you know what? Life in the big city is what it is. You can't fear it. All you have to do is deal with it. And spousal support alimony laws are very different in every state. They really are. And maybe you live in a state that has a lot of different criterion for spousal support. And maybe the person who wasn't earning a living very well, maybe they won't be granted very much spousal support if it came to that. Maybe they'll be granted spousal support for a short period of time and a small amount of money because they could be earning a living. And maybe they could be earning a living equal to yours. Who knows? But if you don't get legal advice, if you don't literally become aware of the divorce laws in your state, you will live in fear and the power dynamic will live on. Facing your fear, dealing with guilt, that's the only way to learn and grow. And so what I say to all of the people who come to me, and I think this is a philosophy a lot of people who are professionals in the divorce community hold, and that is, use divorce as a learning experience. Use divorce to grow. And so take this uneven power dynamic of, I have all the money, you have nothing, but I'm letting you control me because you're saying that you will see an attorney if I don't give you every single thing you want whenever I want it and delay the divorce process. That's ridiculous. Yet it's reality. It's ridiculous if you're only thinking logically, but when we're going through divorce, logic is so far removed from the way we make decisions because it's so emotional. And our emotions don't have logic. And so that's why you really do need to engage other people who can just speak to you in another way and give you the confidence to change the power dynamic. And I'm even going to speak to the person who doesn't have the assets and has a sketchy work employment history. Don't feel guilty about that. Don't do that either, so that you have to try and manipulate and control the other person who's so willing to give you everything. Don't do that to the other person. Use divorce as a learning experience for you too. Okay, so you weren't the one that earned all the money. You weren't the one that accrued all the assets. I know it can be demeaning and diminishing, but you can turn it around. You really can change your life and turn it around if you too apologize for your part in creating a divorce. And just say, thank you very much for everything you're giving me. I know it's the law, but I also want to thank you. Okay, let's do this together. Let's finish. I mean, that would make such a beautiful end to the marriage. And then the person who accrued all the assets would even feel better about giving them away. Yes, it's the law, but you still have to feel good about what you're doing. And so you, the person who wasn't able to match or equal the money your spouse had, it's absolutely okay. You're still a fine, wonderful human being. You really are. But don't do in the settlement what you did in the marriage, which was not honor the spouse who was working and accruing assets, because that spouse just set you up. That spouse just set you up with more money than you have made thus far on your own. And that person's okay with doing that for you. And so it's just a matter of honoring each other back and getting through the fear, not feeling guilty, apologizing to each other for anything that you've done, and making the best settlement you can. Okay, so that's one story. Here's another story. This is an interesting one. A ton of money in the settlement. well, not multimillionaires, but a ton of money in the settlement. One person makes quite a lot of money. The other person makes better than average money, but still not as much as the other person. There's a child or children, and the way they lived on the combined income allowed the couple to provide very well for their children. Now in the divorce settlement, it's about money again. And it's also about a lack of full disclosure, a lack of communication in how the money was spent. And now we have a breakdown of the marriage. And in the breakdown of the marriage, maybe the activities established that were enormously expensive activities, from education to extracurricular activities, cannot be evenly divided once the divorce is final. One person has far more money than the other person to do that. So what do? You either scale back on those expenses, which is going to be a very hard issue when you present that back to children, because you've already established activities for them and you've already established schooling for them. It's very difficult to dial that back. But the person with most of the money feels disadvantaged, feels that there wasn't honesty in communication, there wasn't honesty in how the money was spent, wants to be generous, truly wants to be generous in the divorce settlement, but the anger is there. And in the generosity, literally positions the other spouse in a very difficult way. And the other spouse being very emotional and fearing that they are going to not have as much money to live on, which they're not. Neither person has as much money to live on in a divorce when there's two households. The same amount of money in one household is obviously spent differently than the same amount of money in two households. So everybody's standard of living changes. It just does. But it changes, though, in a way that the standard of living attempts to be equal, even though it may be slightly diminished for both people, it at least attempts to make itself equal. And that's how divorce laws are written in every state. So what do you do in the divorce settlement? You see the uneven power balance. And it's obvious that there's an uneven power balance, but people are emotional. They don't know what to do. There's guilt on the part of the spouse that knows they overspent. You know when you overspend. You know when you take money and the other spouse doesn't know it. I mean, you know when you're hiding behavior that will create shit hitting the fan when it's exposed. And here it is. It's hitting the fan over and over again. It's exposed, and it's a tough situation to deal with. Feeling fearful about losing the amount of money the lower earning spouse was used to is an enormous fear. But honestly, people live on less and are happy. And I've seen people in Hollywood, I've dealt with some very, very wealthy, formerly influential producers and studio heads. And when they lose their power center, when they lose their money, they have a very difficult time living on less. Their egos are involved. Yep, their egos are involved, that they can't maybe keep their kids in the same schools because it's just too much money. They can't go on the lavish vacations they're used to. They're embarrassed to tell their kids they can't. God forbid they have to drive a Honda. Now that's really funny. Heaven forbid, so you go to leasing expensive cars because you have to have that appearance. But it's a false appearance and it eats away inside. You know, what the outside world sees, who freaking cares? It's how you live internally. It's how settled you are with the way you're living your life, the way you're making decisions, the honesty with which you address your life. That's the important part of all of this. And all of this comes out in a divorce mediation, in a divorce settlement. Then there's fear over living alone for the first time, perhaps. If you've never lived alone, let's just say you're the lower earning spouse and you went from living at home to getting married and it's a very long-term marriage. You've never really lived on your own. You don't know what that experience is like. And here you are faced with it. So there's guilt over knowing you've overspent. There's fear over living alone. There's fear about losing the money that you used to live on and the impression it may make to your friends. And there's just the inability to literally think through the arithmetic of a settlement. And then on the other side, the spouse who has all the money, who maybe doesn't even really want to get divorced, but they can't stand being disrespected. They finally realize their money has been taken without them knowing it, and now all of a sudden they don't have as much in savings as they thought they had, and they just can't keep living like this. And also the fear, the higher earner may have fear over what their child is going to think or their children will think when the divorce comes to bear, and if they have to change any miscellaneous expense for their child. You know, there's fear there too. And how do you keep your relationship going with your child if you have to cut back on expenses? It's a horrible situation. So how do you change the power dynamic? Okay, apology. I cannot tell you what the power of an apology does. The lower earning spouse who spent money on the child, on miscellaneous expenses, maybe on themselves for shopping, maybe to look fabulous so their other spouse can keep loving them and being proud of them. Takes a lot of money to look good, by the way, especially if you live in an expensive city. It's not cheap looking fabulous. But an apology goes a long way. Apologize for spending money without telling your spouse. Apologize for whatever it is you believe and know you have done to cause the divorce. Now, if you're the higher earning spouse, have you done anything to cause your spouse to spend money without telling you? Have you become difficult to deal with? Is it hard for you to give up money? You know, you may have some issues with money too. And maybe you caused your spouse to behave in a way that now is very offensive to you. So there could be a lot of apologies going around, but honestly, an apology, it's like medicine. It cures cancer. You know, it gets the bad cells out of the heart. But mean it. Don't give an apology without meaning it, because that's obvious too. And then look at different financial equations that might serve both spouses better in a settlement than the one you're using now. You know, settlements are difficult to make. It may mean you have to go to another formula. And maybe instead of accepting on the surface what looks like generosity, but that results in the lower earning spouse being on the hook for more minor child expenses than the other spouse, or being on the hook for more house expenses, living expenses than the other spouse, compare the settlement terms offered by the higher earning spouse to a straight legal division of assets and debts, child and spousal support, just like your state has for you to look at, and maybe revise the monthly expenses that are causing the divorce and subsequently difficult in the settlement. But the lower earning spouse in this case has to move beyond their fear of money to look at how going straight legal division of assets and debts, straight child and spousal support, or alimony as it's called in some states, to a straight division of and payment of minor child expenses, to see if this might be a better way of approaching the settlement in the long term versus accepting more money in the short term. So the person with more money, A, yes, has a little bit more power, kind of. They feel more powerful because they have money, but they also feel fear that they're losing their money too. So it's really interesting, isn't it? This dichotomy of having more money, that gives you a sense of power and security, but then losing it to child and spousal support, that has the opposite effect. That puts fear in you. So, but that person is the one that really does take the lead on offering money in a settlement, the one who has more money. The one who has less money, depending on their relationship to money. What if you have an abuse of money? What if money is like a drug to you? You know, money is an issue of substance abuse too. It's not just drugs and alcohol and porn and gambling. It's our relationship to money that can have that substance abuse quality to it. So this would be a time to learn. The person who earns less money but spends more money, that person can really use the divorce to turn their life around. After apologizing for their part in the divorce and looking at possibly what a straight division of assets and debts would be and a legal amount of child and spousal support, do you know that you've just changed the power dynamic to be equal? It's incumbent upon the spouse that earns less money to be the one that actually looks at addressing the law and how the law specifies settlement should go in your state. That might give you the power you need to have an equal voice in the settlement discussions so that the final settlement agreement will not create any imposition on either person and be the best it can be. You've just changed the power dynamic by not accepting the generosity of the other spouse, because that generosity comes with qualifications. It comes with rules. It comes with control. So you're allowing yourself to be controlled by taking the quote-unquote generosity of the other person and still being controlled when the divorce is final. Because that generosity issue will come up over and over and over and over again, and it'll be held over your head. It'll suffocate you, and you'll wish you had never done it. And I'm telling you right now, you can live on less and be happy and be secure. You really can. Don't fear that. It will all work out. But get that power imbalance balanced by taking the power of not accepting generosity and accepting less if less equals the law. I'm not saying take less than the law provides. Take less so that it equals the law. Now you've just changed the power imbalance and to a more equal power. All right, now those are two tough decisions. Those are two tough stories. Now I'm going to give you a couple really good stories, because this just warms my heart when I talk about the situations that I'm going to identify next. So I had another couple come to the office, and several years ago. They didn't come together. They didn't communicate well together at all. It really wasn't that amicable, except for the fact that they didn't want to litigate. The assets equaled $25 million. It was a $25 million settlement. The husband was the one who was the higher wage earner. They had minor children. He had the ability to make money over and over. He was an international financier. He didn't spend a second arguing about money. Not a second. He just said, we're going to split it down the middle. She gets 12.5, I get 12.5. And I'm going to pay for all the kids' private school, and I'm going to put a trust up for them. The only concession made, because it had to be made, was she didn't get spousal support. With $12.5 million and you get to keep the house, beautiful, beautiful house. in obviously a very exclusive neighborhood in the Los Angeles area. Well, with $12.5 million, you don't need spousal support. You can invest the money. You'll have money the rest of your life. And that was fine. She was fine doing that. But they didn't spend one second arguing. Just, here, Jude, here's the settlement. Do it. Easiest divorce I've ever done. Loved them. Then there was another gentleman who came here. Three divorces. And he is, I'm not going to use his name, but he's a famous, famous merchant in Los Angeles. Famous merchant. I might even say nationally famous. Don't know about internationally. Nationally famous. His mantra, give her whatever she wants. I can always make more money. Give her whatever she wants. I can always make more money. Do you know how wonderful that was to work with him? It was so refreshing. It was so amazing to hear those words come out of somebody's mouth. Give her whatever she wants. I can always make more money. I loved him. I just loved him for doing that. I don't think there's anything more amicable. The gentleman with the $25 million estate, I mean, that was a great way too of creating a settlement. No argument, give her what she wants. Here, I'll divide everything. He can always make more money, and he will. And then the merchant in Los Angeles, give her whatever she wants. I can always make more money. Lovely, lovely way to get divorced. And then I will end with a couple that everybody knows. I don't. I didn't talk to them. I didn't do their divorce. But Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon, the creator and owner of Amazon, with his wife, whose name escapes me. I'm so sorry, Mrs. Bezos. Divided the empire evenly. The divorce took 5 minutes. Remember in the news, it was no back and forth, no arguing, no this and that. Just, let's just divide it in half. Who cares? I mean, literally, can you live on a billion? Yes, I think you can. And that was the easiest divorce too. I'm watching it as an interested person in the divorce field. But do you remember anything being in the news with arguments? No, because it wasn't. They just divided things and moved on. She started working with charities. I read about that. She started giving her money to charities. And as legend has it, the way Amazon was created was a discussion in a trip that they took. A discussion, perhaps Jeff Bezos led the discussion, I really don't know. They didn't invite me on that trip. But that's how legend has it. Amazon was created, the whole idea for it, and you know it started out as books, right? And grew to... Well, didn't they flourish more than anybody in the pandemic? Didn't Amazon, if you follow the money and you look at the pandemic we're in, who made the most money out of the pandemic? Amazon. Because people had to order. And it just this just amazes me how tragedies can create profit centers for people. But back to the divorce. Split it down the middle. Quite enough money for both of them to live with. The power dynamic for them was very equally balanced. The power dynamic for the people with the $25 million estate, evenly balanced. The merchant in Los Angeles, evenly balanced. The man with more money said, just give her the money, give her what she wants. He didn't care about an unequal power balance, didn't care why the divorce was happening. Just give her what she wants. Maybe it was his fault. Who knows? He had three divorces. So maybe it's tough for him to stay married. But as long as he ingratiates and satisfies and allows the ex-wives to be profitable, who cares? I guess, you know, we all have tough decisions in life and tough situations. But if you can walk away from the marriage feeling good about yourself, that says a lot. So that's how to change the power imbalance in a divorce settlement. Thank you very much for listening. I really do appreciate the time you take to visit with me every week. And I hope that everything that I'm providing for you is well worth your time. You've been listening to Constructive Uncoupling. I'm Judy Weigel, the amicable divorce expert. Constructive Uncoupling, a podcast devoted to amicable divorces. And please, if you would like to get in touch with me, you can through my email address, Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com, Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com, or go to my website, divorceresourceinc.com, divorceresourceinc.com, and call me. I'll help you in any way I can. Talk to you next week.